Would you give your mum, dad, aunt or that uncle who hugged your partner a little too long free access to your phone?
Oh, no!
Oh, my God, it's a really long video. Ew!
In Dave's brand new YouTube original, Get Off My Phone, we've got six comedians to give their phones over to a relative with total freedom to read messages, DMs, photos and browser history.
Where's your search history?
Sorry?
What to do, tips for relief.
The rules are simple. Their relative can read anything they want and even make calls from the comedian's phone.
What is this?
What is... I don't want this one.
That looks really bad.
Starring Tanya Moore, Anya Magliano, Finlay Christie, Travis J with his mum Angie Lamar, Hayley Morris, Grace Campbell and dad Alistair Campbell.
Slightly sexually compromising
people. Divulging their deepest digital secrets.
What the hell is happening?
Get Off My Phone, a Dave YouTube original. Available now on Dave's YouTube channel.
Hi there, Podders. It's me, Ben Shires, just recovered enough from the Leicester hoo-ha to greet you for the final time in this current run of Dave Weeklies with what I have to confess is something of a pointless episode. But fear not, in order to determine today's guest, we gave 100 people 100 seconds to name as many of their favourite quiz show presenters slash hosts of new Dave programmes as they could, and the results came back unanimously in favour of Alexander Armstrong. The lovely Xander popped in to talk wine, women and song, respectively his expanding plonk collection, Rachel Weisz, and why he tries not to play piano at parties anymore. If you guess correctly, reward yourself with a delightful listening experience that also features a return to the Frog and Bucket Comedy Club in Manchester, which, for the second year running, has been crowned with the Dave One Night Stand Award for Best Comedy Night in association with Absolute Radio. Good for them, although I'm holding out high hopes for Toad of Toad Hole next year. And finally, and this is the only time I'll be mentioning this during the episode, as I don't want to come across as desperate, the Dave Weekly has been nominated for a Loaded Laughter Award. In keeping with all the most important things in life, like general elections and the X Factor, it's decided by the public, so head to loaded.co.uk/laughters to place your vote, and make sure it's for us. Thanks, bye! Okay, Alexander Armstrong, welcome to our Dave Weekly Alexander Armstrong's Big Ask special.
Ah, a weekly special.
We do it every week. I mean, unbeknownst to you, we have been for the last 18 months just trailing this. You can imagine how almost pre-epic we've become now that it's less than a month away.
Of course,
we're recording this in advance, but by the time it goes out, it will be literally round the corner. Well, not literally, obviously. That would be weird. How could a podcast be round the corner from a podcast TV show?
I thought you were talking about your tumescence there.
Sorry. Right. Good God.
I'm sorry. I think round the corner, I've never heard that expression before.
I mean, it can go above sea level when I'm below it, but hasn't got the corner turning capabilities.
Ken Tynan had that, though.
Really?
Apparently. Read his diaries. Anyway, sorry. It's lovely to be here.
Are they published or have you just leafed through them? I need to find a man whose cock can go around a corner for research purposes. That's the kind of thing that your computer gets seized for.
Yeah.
That's not... Anyway, there's no prizes for guessing what today's show, you know, what we'll be talking about. Obviously, it's the new series of Big Ask, but we will be touching on a lot more besides that. And you can rest assured, I will be touching your knee at some point. So that's to come if you're lucky.
Okay.
So let's get the admin out of the way. How are you feeling today, Alexander?
I'm feeling very well, thank you.
Good. One thing that I did want to ask you before we go any further is I've heard lots of people, including yourself, refer to you as Xander rather than Alexander. Is that your preferred truncation of the name?
It is, yes. It is. My mum came up with that one.
Right.
My mum insists she invented Xander.
Really? She's coined that.
Yeah, she gets a bit cross. She gets quite cross when other people call me Xander.
Right. Because it's hers.
Yeah, she felt that was a sort of home name.
Mm.
And then she did say to me quite seriously, I notice a lot of people calling you Xander now. And I said, well, it's mine. That's my name.
So, the thing about that identification tag that you gave me, Mum.
That whole sobriquet thing. That's what I've been. That's what you dubbed me.
Mm.
And I'm just taking it a step further. But you've taken the ball and running with it. Mm. So.
It's Xander following me round, if anything.
I did work with this American guy once, and I was doing a cartoon voiceover, and he said, Alexander, that's a long name. Do you abbreviate it all, like Alex? And I said, well, you can call me what you like, but people call me Xander. And he said, okay, Xander, I'll call you Xander. And for the rest of the afternoon, he would say, Xander, top of page 5, Xander.
The thing is, called Xander, you sound like a Flash Gordon baddie.
Yeah. Prisoner of Xander. It's, it's flexible.
It's pretty cool. I really like it. It does bring to mind for me, having grown up with Buffy, her friend was Xander, wasn't
true.
It?
That's true, yeah.
But he was kind of cool in a geeky, nerdish way.
Yeah, he was kind of cool, I guess, yeah.
He's like in a kind of Chandler from Friends way. Yeah. He was,
exactly. Then Vin Diesel played a character called Xander.
Really?
Happily in a film that died. Died.
Because I always wonder what happens if you've got a name and then someone more famous comes along and appropriates that name. It must be so annoying.
What about someone really? There must have been someone who was someone's sweetheart in the Edwardian period called Adolf.
Yeah.
And everyone must have thought, oh, lovely, that's a nice name. Oh, no.
Yeah.
So Adolf and Osama, two names not really being used so much now.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine on the register of names, they feature fairly down low.
Fairly low.
Yeah, absolutely. Although, I mean, you know, names, old-fashioned names have a comeback all the time. Who knows? Adolf could be reclaimed.
It would need quite a bit of...
a great PR campaign on it.
But they want to bash some of the dents out of it first.
Yeah.
But yeah, maybe. Yeah.
I think the vegetarians really need to hammer home the fact that he was like...
He was a vegetarian.
Yeah.
There you go. Claim him as your own.
Yeah. You can have him, veggies. He's yours. One of the things that I think you've talked about in previous interviews is, and maybe, I don't know whether Xander as a name sort of feeds into this, is your concern in people maybe thinking that you're a bit posh, a bit toffee.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, if you discount your public school education, your degree from Cambridge, the fact that you always play upper class people and you forming a production company with Ben Miller with the name Toff Media, where do you think this kind of presumption arises from?
I don't know where it comes from, I'll be honest. I've no idea. It baffles me.
Why do people presume
because I'm posh that I'm posh?
Yeah. That's the problem with the public.
That was a question someone asked me in an interview. Said, I mean, does it bother you that people assume you're posh? I said, well, not so much. I think it would bother me if people assumed because I'm posh lots of other things. I mean, when people basically assume, oh, you're posh, therefore I don't like you. I don't come across that.
Yeah, because then you're realming into stereotype, aren't you?
Yeah.
And that's when it becomes a little bit boring. But what I thought, what really sort of engages me about the way that you've used your poshness is that you kind of lampoon it all the time, and you're able to play all these characters.
Funny. I mean, posh is very funny.
Yeah.
Posh is always funny.
I mean,
posh is vulnerable. I think most people don't realise quite how vulnerable posh people sometimes are. Not always. There are some unlovable posh people, I'm sure. But they're just another adornment on this crazy society we live in. You know, so it's still another thing to be enjoyed and celebrated.
Do you think it's a peculiarly British thing?
Yes, I think it probably. Well, I mean, aspiration isn't British alone, but it's funny because when we were little in the 70s, so when I was little in the 70s, before we were born, of course, it was still, if people wanted to aspire and generally, you know, people wanted, they would emulate posh people.
Mm.
You know, that was the sort of example you would follow. And people, you know, there are all those sort of stories of people who went to have elocution lessons so that they sounded posh. And you'd ever catch anyone doing that now.
One of the most popular films of the 60s, My Fair Lady.
There you go.
All about a girl as common as muck, learning to speak proper.
There you go.
It's a strange phenomenon, though, isn't
it? Yeah, yeah, yeah. Nobody would do that now.
No.
I mean, I think, if anything...
It's gone the other way, hasn't
anything,
it?
You're going to get... I wonder, for example, what the child of the Cambridges, when they have their little baby daughter... Maybe daughter, that'd be fun, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
But the
I think it should be a daughter.
I think it should be by royal decree.
Yeah, definitely. And I think she should do whatever Prince Charles was getting upset about and marry a Catholic. Yeah.
Or a Muslim.
Uh-oh. Watch out, there's some feathers being ruffled. Put that bird saying, down, Xander.
Why? Well, you know, why they make a fuss about Roman Catholics, you know, why not?
Yeah.
You know, why it could be, you know, be, it'd be interesting.
Let's take a Jedi into the into Book Palace. Let's see what happens then.
So.
No more attacks from the Sith. That'd help.
Well, or you open a whole can of worms, Sith-wise.
Yeah, well, so like you say, you're from Northumberland area,
mm-hmm.
and you schooled around there in
some very good
schools, but you were kind of more focused towards music when you were growing up.
Yeah, I was. I used to sing a lot. I sang a lot. I went to a music school in Edinburgh, a specialist Yehudi Menuhin school.
Wow.
Yeah.
All the big names.
Yeah, all the names there.
So did you play as well? Did you play instruments?
A little bit of piano.
Yeah.
I
mean, you say a little bit. You're a musical. You must have been quite good.
I was quite good. I was mainly there for singing, actually, to be honest. Mm. But it was a very good grounding in music. Very, very good.
Mm.
Enough of a grounding then for me, sort of pretty much to set me on on a course. So music, I played a big part throughout school. I was a choral scholar at Cambridge, so I did a lot of singing.
There. Yeah, it's quite intense as well. You can end up going all over the place. You can take all over the world.
Yeah, it did. Yeah, we toured a lot. I was at Trinity, where they have there are sort of three big choirs at Cambridge. The King's a big famous male voice choir, and John's another male voice choir, and Trinity is the big mixed voice choir. So we'd record two CDs. Release two CDs a year.
Wow.
And we do about three tours each year as well. So
so that's another thing to add to the CV then.
Oh, yeah.
Actor, comedian, writer, recording artist.
Big, there you go.
Up there.
Yeah, up there.
Yeah. I mean, are you one of those people, if you're at a party or even have them in the streets or restaurants or whatever, you see like a piano and you have to go along and have a sing and a play?
I used to.
Really?
Yeah, I've learned.
You were that guy.
I was just a terrible show-off.
Yeah.
Terrible show-off.
I mean, it's part and parcel in a way of being a performer that you have to have an element of the show-off about you.
Yeah. I think the best thing of all, though, was, growing out of that, I think. I think I became a much better person when I learned to control that urge to sit down at a piano and go, look at me, everyone, look, look.
I'm not taking requests.
Yes, exactly. I'm going to play the three things I know very well, very well, and then I'm going to walk away.
And you're going to think I'm excellent. Yeah. Do you know, when I go to parties, it's more often, I think, easier if there's not a baby grand there, where someone has a guitar. Now, I can play guitar. A little bit. I'm self-taught, so it's dubious whether I can play, but I can strum a tune.
Yeah.
And it always riles me, almost sort of like that scene, you know, in The Office, where David Brent calls for his guitar and starts playing it in a very kind of self-serving way.
Yeah.
You know, and that guy, and I instantly hate that person, but also I'm kind of slightly jealous that I didn't think of it first, because there's always a gathering of girls, and there's me sort of ashen face next to them with the dark clouds gathering, going, what a dick! Who does he think he is to be playing this guitar? Guitar at parties, stop playing Flight of the Conchords songs like you wrote them, you idiot. And the girl's going, why are you hating on him? He's just being cool.
Yeah, we really. Oh, and he's so handsome, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Now I notice.
Look,
now
play it with your penis. I bet it's big enough.
The worst of all, though, is when everybody who can play the piano is sort of edging a bit closer to it and maybe looking down at it, maybe stroking the keys a little bit and thinking, I'm just going to have a little tentative. Just when you're just easing your way in to then sit down and then go, now let me see. I'll play the song I can play.
Yeah.
And you're just thinking that. And then some other person gets in there and they're playing the theme to some TV show from the 80s. You think, well, anyone can play that. Oh, if it was just I can play the theme to a TV show from the 80s, everyone in the room would be playing.
Yes.
My friend, Miami Vice, not that interesting.
No.
Not that hard to play either.
I tell you what, Xander, it's populist and it gets people moving and all of a sudden, that stuff that you were playing was great, but this, it brings back so many memories.
Oh, brilliant. Hill Street Blues, brilliant.
Yeah. Great. Yeah. Oh, do you remember Knight Rider? Oh, I do. Let's reminisce about that for 30 minutes and then kiss the guy who's playing it. Ooh. We'll be back with Alexander soon, but in the meantime, here's what happened when we returned to Manchester's Frog and Bucket venue to present them with Dave's One Night Stand Award for the second year on the trot. Ah, I bet it'd be lovely to win an award, wouldn't it? Just putting that out there. Hello, I'm here with Alex Boardman at the Frog and Bucket, who's going to be emceeing the night tonight. Hello, Alex.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm okay. I am emceeing the night in 15 minutes.
Yeah, anxiously looking at your watch there.
Yes.
You are due to start this comedy gig very soon.
Yeah.
And this won't be your first time. You're not an amateur at this.
I've been doing this venue for about 20 years, in this room for 17 and the Frog in its other guise for 3 years before that.
What does it mean when you see someone who starts off kind of, you know, tentatively, and then they end up on telly? Because you must have seen that.
I've seen it loads. It's really strange. I've compared it so much that the amount of comedians now who sometimes are 10 years older than me say, oh, you compared my first gig. There's about six in Manchester who are on the national circuit. But years and years ago, what was the most interesting was watching Johnny Vegas, Peter Kay, because it would be about 96, 97, and they were just doing the first gigs, and I was kind of trotting to and from. I was at uni, and then I'd come back and do bits. Mm. So I'd see them, and we're all at the same level. Then I had my year away, my final year at uni. I came back, and they'd just both gone amazingly good. And it was what was so good about that. It was almost like there was a rivalry between those two.
Oh, really?
Yeah, in about 97.
That's never really been that much publicised, has it? It's
no, it was a friendly rivalry. Yeah. And it was just because they were both new comics getting good at the same time in the same venue. So you'd come 1 week and they'd go, oh, Peter did 25 minutes last week. And then so Johnny go, all right, okay. And then that night he'd do 27. Then the next one he'd do 30. And then, and then before you knew it, within about 3 months, they were both doing, how long did you do tonight? Oh, an hour and 10. And sometimes, to be honest, when you were comparing, you'd be thinking, oh, come on, get off. But it's there's been loads of, John Bishop did his first ever gig here.
Yeah, it's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, it's funny. There's a lot of history.
So 20 years in, there or thereabouts.
Yeah.
What does the next 20 years hold?
Oh,
Is the bubble going to burst? That's what people keep saying.
But I hope I'm not sat here in 20 years' time with somebody going, oh, you're still here and you only look 50. And I'm going, yeah, thanks. Thanks for that.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. We'll see where you are then, Alex. But thanks for chatting to us in the meantime.
No worries. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Ladies and gentlemen, there's a very important announcement before we start the show. We've got a great show tonight. Four acts, two breaks. It's going to be brilliant. But before we do that, I'm going to welcome on Ben, who's from Dave Television, and Dave Perkin, who's the owner of the club. So if you could give a big round of applause to Ben and Dave, and they've got a little announcement. Thank you very much.
Greetings, Frog and Bucket. I'm Ben, as Alex just said. Obviously, this is Dave. We're going to keep this brief because we want you to get on with the comedy. Also, I've got my TARDIS parked on the meter, so that's going to have to be quick to get to. I'm basically from the Dave Weekly podcast, and as part of the Dave channel, we've been running a competition to find the best comedy venue. Anyway, I was here last year, and I'm here again this year to present this to the Frog and Bucket, which is Dave's One Night Stand Award. So congratulations, David Perkin, for that. Obviously... It is the second year running, so we might have to rename it to the Dave's Let's Take It Steady Award or something like that. But we're really pleased. The Frog and Bucket is a brilliant venue, and we're really pleased that it's being as well supported as it is tonight. So thank you for supporting live comedy, and thank you for supporting this great venue. David.
And what I'd really like to say is that it's not me who's got this award. I know it sounds really boring. It's actually all the customers have been coming here for 19 years. So it's 20 years next year. Also, the staff... look after you all the time. And very, very important is actually the funny guys, the comedians. Because if you watch all the walls, we've had many, many, many comedians come out of these walls. Have a great night. I'm going to get at the bar getting drunk. Any complaints, come and see me, and I'll pass you on to my doorman. And cheers.
Thanks a lot, Frog and Bucket. Enjoy your night. From one award to another now, here's a little advertorial message that, despite my best efforts, has somehow slipped through the net. Hello, Pod Rascals. I'm Ben Shires, and you're listening to The Dave Weekly, the show that values you for you, and not just you for your ability to cast a vote, although that's also very important to us. Now, you've probably heard through the grapevine, perhaps via an excited friend, the internet or double-page spreads in national publications, that we've been nominated for a coveted Loaded Laughter Award. Sure, big deal. We don't want to make a song and dance about it. Primarily because we don't have the budget to produce one, even though I had a great line that rhymed laughters with BAFTAs. That's just the kind of podcast we are. As you know, normally we'd never ask anything of you, dear listener, but we're making an exception this time to ask for just 30 seconds of your time to vote for us as best podcast at loaded.co.uk/laughters. Then just another half an hour promoting us via social media sites and contacting local radio stations, asking them to promote us, and maybe get a few t-shirts and banners printed up, mouse mats, mugs are always good. It's not really much, is it? Thank you for your time. Well, God knows how that got in there. I expressly said I didn't want this podcast to just become a marketing push for our Loaded Laughter nomination, details of which can be found at loaded.co.uk/laughters. That's L-A-F-T-A-S, laughters. How annoying! Anyway, back to more Alexander Armstrong. So you were at uni with Ben Miller, but you didn't really... Your paths didn't really cross.
No, I knew of Ben. Ben was very famous at Cambridge.
Hmm. Is it possible to be, like, famous just on campus? Was that...
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, he did a lot of comedy, so he was well known among people who went to watch The Footlights. Mm. He was also... he was a bit of a rising star in the physics department.
Mm.
And
it's not often you can say that with any kind of irony, but without any irony, but yeah.
Yeah, he was. Oh, down at... Yeah. Down at Cavendish,
and
he was the man.
I hear that he had a rather tasty bit of arm candy as well.
He did, yeah. Rachel Weisz was his...
Rachel Weisz, James Bond's wife, Rachel Weisz.
I know.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, Ben.
So presumably you met her on multiple occasions then?
I have indeed, on multiple occasions. Yeah.
Stop saying multiple and then Rachel Weisz. What the hell are you insinuating? We had multiple things.
Weisz met, yes. Yes,
that sounds like a rap sheet. Yeah, we got him in for multiple Weisz, Sarge.
Yeah, she's like a sort of comedy sister-in-law.
Right. So do you know her now? Would you still...
I don't really so much. I haven't seen her for a long time.
Because she's gone all Hollywood, hasn't she?
She'd say hello.
But just hello.
But well, as you say, she's Mrs. James Bond.
I know, that's really cool, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, wow. I mean, but obviously had to give up the Miller to get there. So, you know,
they're not entirely dissimilar people. Ben Miller, Daniel Craig.
Yeah, I mean, I think Daniel Craig's great at physics too, isn't he? He's got he's known for his...
Yes, that's right.
He wanted to call Quantum of Solace Quantum Physics of Solace.
That's
but they just wouldn't let him.
They wouldn't have that. No. That
Skyfall and the Implications Thereof by Daniel Craig. Yeah, I mean, they mainly started a thesis, didn't they? So you two got together, you and Ben Miller.
Yes, after university.
Did a few Edinburgh shows.
We did a few Edinburgh shows. Yeah, we were part of a group of people that ran a comedy club in Notting Hill called TBA that we set up ourselves. So we could do sketch comedy, because no one else did sketch comedy. So we thought, well, if we put on our own club, then we can do it. So we did.
Yeah.
It's an ingenious idea. This
Who needs sort of appraisal from others? Let's just do it.
Do you know what I mean? And also, if you get eight to ten people involved, each of them only has to bring a handful of people along, and you've sold out.
Yeah.
So we sold out every week. I mean, it was a massive, massive success. And after a while, genuine punters came along as well.
Really?
Occasionally, there'd
without
be room
coercion.
For them. Yeah.
Incredible.
And, yeah.
I mean, they do say that's the way that a lot of actors start out in comedy. Lots of stand-up comedians are actors because you can write your own stuff, you get work straight away.
Yeah, you know, if you're a writer and a performer, the only bit that's missing there is the producer, and anyone can become a producer. All you need is some leaflets and a few hours on a Saturday.
I'm producing!
And there you are. That's what I'm doing. And, you know, there you are. You've started your comedy club, so we did that. And then we went up to Edinburgh. Giddy we were on the back of our success at this comedy club. Only then we went to Edinburgh and no one really liked what we did.
You couldn't buy the audience that time.
Oh, no, we couldn't. No, apparently in Edinburgh, people have to come who aren't blood relations of yours.
Arseholes.
I know.
They've got different rules, the Scots, though. It's the way it works up there.
And so we did that in 94. 95, we didn't even go. We had such a dispiriting time in 1994. But then 96, we regrouped and thought, come on.
The two of
focus,
you.
Focus, focus, focus. We're going to work on this. We're going to do a really good show for Edinburgh. Mm. Went back, and that was, and we stormed it.
That was the beginning of the beginning,
yeah,
really.
Nothing. Here's the secret, though. Nothing that much had changed from between 94 when we went first time, yeah, and 96 when we went the second time. Not that much. It was just having gone there, people then thought they'd heard of us and didn't really mind so much.
Do you know what that suggests? Yeah. That you were ahead of the curve, Xander. That you were doing things before people were ready for them.
I'll take that.
That's the PR spin. And just go with it.
I'm going to keep that.
Yeah, just roll with it. Yeah, so Alexander, you and Ben rose to prominence very quickly then with Armstrong and Miller and were kind of adored as the comedy darlings. But then Pointless comes along and you've got a whole new fan base and people recognising you for a tea time quiz.
I know. I mean, this is the weird thing. Suddenly presenting happened in that during that sort of period when I was stopped working with Ben. I was asked to do Have I Got News For You, and I stepped up. This is when Angus had just been recently shamed and stripped, stripped of his role. I mean, sorry, this is another news story people don't know about.
Sounds like you know a lot about this, Silverson, and convenient that you were to step into his shoes as well.
Very interesting that. Yeah, anyway, moving on. I was put into a presenting role, which I'd never been in before. And loved it. Really, really loved it. Mm. And various things happened on the back of that. The first thing was I was offered Countdown by Channel 4.
Good grief! And who turns down Countdown?
Well, in the end, I did. I wasn't initially sure about that because it was just after various other things had wound down. I think we were doing Armstrong and Miller, but probably we weren't likely to do more than one more series of it for BBC One. And we had a family, and I was suddenly thinking, well, you know. It's a salary. Yeah. It's a guaranteed salary for a long time. Mm. You know, I would get to live up in the north again.
Yeah, see. It's Leeds that
they
do,
it's Leeds,
isn't it?
Yeah. So it would have been. There was lots to recommend it, and then I just thought, actually, it's someone else's show. I can't really be doing it, so I turned it down with a bit of a heavy heart, but actually a spring in my step. Can you picture that? Shortly after that, I was approached by Endemol with Pointless, and this I thought, well, this there's a germ of something here, and I think this is something that we could turn into a. It doesn't have just to be a sort of straight jacket game show. We could actually make this a bit more fun, but a bit of personality into it. So hence Pointless's.
Yeah.
I mean, extraordinary success. I mean, you know, you can make a show as good as you want it to be. You can never guarantee that people are going to enjoy it. Mm. So, I mean, Pointless, I thank every star, lucky or otherwise.
And kudos to you for taking a show called Pointless, sounds like a poison chalice,
you know,
and making
think?
It brilliant.
Yeah, you got to face these things down, you see. I thought we kind of owned that one by calling the show Pointless. Mm. It doesn't stop a lot of people. Occasionally, you'll get letters written to message boards or people send letters into to papers saying, Pointless, a programme called Pointless. Couldn't agree more.
Disgruntled from Milton Keynes.
You think, we had actually spotted that.
Yeah, yeah.
We'd spotted that but still, you know, we walked into that one.
And that then has paved the way for all sorts of other presenting. And the reason why we're kind of talking today, which is Alexander Armstrong's
big ass.
Always get your name in there. Once you get to a certain level, keep reminding people at what
Who
level that is.
Yeah, yeah.
So you must have been pretty thrilled to have someone kind of suggest a show where you've got the top billing.
Yeah, I got billing in that, which I wasn't. It was big. It was just a big ask when we started
before the agents got involved.
Before I did. But don't you think today's a bit short? Big ask. It's lovely. Big ask. I mean, what I'm really proud about with big ask is I think we've come up with a particularly nice format. I mean, it's a very simple format. It's very approachable and easy, but it allows people to sit down and be comfortable, and they're funny. You get them people to be funny, witty, bit of clever chat, but it's much more personable. It's much more it's a more considered and slightly more laid back show. So it's not quite like those sort of sharp elbowed panel shows where everyone's sort of scrabbling to shout over someone else so they can get their bon mot in. Mm. You know, you haven't just got lots of gladiatorial stand ups trying to get 5 minutes, a tight five, yeah, from their now defunct set. They go, oh, I can.
Yeah,
just putting their setup on bricks and picking their favourite gags out of it and lobbing them over, you know, over towards the audience. It's not really like that. It's a much more relaxed.
Yeah, and it doesn't feel shoehorned or tried. Well, I'll tell you what. Shall we? Let's take a quick listen to a clip. I think that'll probably illustrate it the best.
Now, Steve, it is you next, and the topic I have chosen for you is the land of your forefathers, the old country there.
Yeah, that's sounding very Woganish there. That's good.
Yes, I was.
Yes, Ireland.
Yes.
And my question is this. What is a cluricorn?
What is a cluricorn? Joe and Tim, will you please write your answers? Steve, you went around Ireland quite recently, didn't you?
I go to Ireland a lot. I go to Ireland about 3 or 4 times a year.
Have you kissed the Blarney Stone?
I have, yeah.
Do you know what happens before all the tourists arrive?
Well, they probably hose it down with antiseptic, don't they?
They piss on it.
They piss on it.
Can I just tell a story about Ireland, which I think sums it up? Two sisters who are friends of mine were hitchhiking around Ireland. They got picked up by a farmer in his van, and he pulled in to a lay-by, and he turned around to them and he went, I don't suppose either of you girls would fancy giving me a bit of a wank now, would you? And so they said, well, we'd rather not. And he went, right you are. And then just carried on.
If you don't ask...
Exactly.
So Stephen asked, what is a cluricorn? Tim, right.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I suppose there's a quick way to answer that. But I put, it's a special sledge that we use to transport fruit. It's not, is it?
But it's not, no, it's not a sledge. But I like that idea that you have just a sledge just for fruit. What would the sledge be going over?
Snow.
Ah. It doesn't really snow in Ireland either.
Well, they don't use it very much. That's why it's a rare word.
Tim, have you been to Ireland?
I have been to Ireland, yeah. Why? What's the reason? Have you been to Ireland? Have you really been there?
I think the thing I really remember about Ireland is not so much the massive amount of fruit they have trouble transporting.
You've got to get these pineapples to Limerick.
How am I going to get over the pass?
Right,
I'm fucked up. I'm getting a lift with him.
Well, there you have it. That's Big Ask. It sounds great. I mean, the initial kind of things which I've been hearing about this series, you've got Jack Whitehall, I think, on the first episode.
Jack Whitehall, Jack Whitehall's dad. He's like sort of Jack Whitehall's
demon. He's very nice. I've met him, actually. He's
Michael.
Lovely.
Mickey W.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's a big name in showbiz, actually. He used to be Judi Dench's agent, I
Colossal.
Believe.
Colossal. Oh, no, he's represented. He was at ICM back in the glory days, back in the early 80s. A big name. A lovely fella as well, actually. I ran into him at a wedding not long after we'd been doing a Big Ask.
Okay. And, it's the kind of circles that you move in.
Oh, God.
The Whitehalls were there.
Yeah.
The Whitehalls of Putney, of course.
They are of Putney.
They are of Putney. I've been round. It's a lovely place. Yeah. I mean, they don't know I was there, but it's a lovely place. I thought very quickly to finish, Alexander, seeing as you were often introducing the Big Ask categories, why don't I flip the tables and we'll do Alexander Armstrong's Big Ask, but back at you. So I'll introduce a subject. You don't really have to ask me a question. You can just talk about the subject. Wine. I know you're a wine buff. And I did read in... If you type in Alexander Armstrong wine into Google, you'll find lots of things, lots of articles that you've done. Particularly, there's one where you say, I can't stop buying wine.
Can't stop buying wine. Literally yesterday...
That's a worry, isn't it?
Well, not really. Well, no, because I buy it... Buying wine is a brilliant thing to do. You buy it because it's a great investment.
Mm.
So it means that you know that at the bottom line is you will probably sell it all again in 10 years' time. But you might not. You might fancy just maybe cracking open a couple of bottles. Mm. Oh, that's nice. There you are.
Great vintage.
Oh, that is a lovely... Oh, that's... The 2011 Burgundies, for example, have just been released. I have filled my boots. My
You drink
God.
Out of boots?
Yeah.
That is incredible. You know, Beau Brummel used to wash his boots in champagne, so you're not too far away from him.
Very good.
I don't want to intimidate you, but you're speaking to a fellow wine enthusiast. I once bought my dad a bottle of Chateau Neuf de Pape that almost crossed the £20 barrier. So I'm just going to point that out there right now.
Wow. Did you like it?
I don't know. I didn't sit around to watch him drink it. I just gave it and then wandered away.
Oh,
as is my way. I'm like a phantom present giver. But yeah, how do you tell... The one thing I want to know about wine is that my palate is obviously not as refined as yours. But
you'd be surprised. I don't think... I mean, you can educate your palate, I guess, but you'll know what you like.
Right.
And you will really like some wines and you really won't like... You know, I mean, some are fine. Some will just get you there.
Mm.
And some are very good for cooking.
Oh, right.
But I think, no, I think you'd be amazed at how good your memory for taste and smell is.
Mm.
For example, you could smell, I bet you any money, if somebody walked past you and they were wearing a particular scent or an aftershave or something, you go, oh, God... That's what Ian used to wear. Ian, who was at school, he used to have. Oh, that's blooming Joop, I think. God,
yeah.
I haven't smelt that for ages. So you will remember things, and your smells will take you back to a holiday when you were five. You go, oh my God, that's that house in Scotland. Oh God, I remember that smell.
That's when Dad accidentally booked us next to a sewage refinery.
There you go. Well, you stayed there too.
Yeah, it was delightful.
Yeah. Mm.
But here's my question, right? So, a bottle of £50 wine, which is I consider that an expensive wine.
Yeah.
How do you know? Occasionally, you'll see a newspaper article come out where some ridiculous entrepreneur trying to splash his cash has bought a bottle for £30,000. Is there a discernible difference in taste between one that costs £30 and £30,000?
Yeah. I mean, I think it tails off into lunacy. After you've spent over about 300 quid a bottle, between 300 quid and £1 million, it's nonsense. But I mean, there are some wines that are, just for rarity's sake, are ridiculously highly priced. But in terms of taste, yes, you would definitely know the difference.
Mm.
And part of the difficulty is you have to drink wines when they're in their sort of best window of drinking.
Mm.
And you might... It's perfectly possible to go to a wine shop. In fact, entirely likely, if you went to a sort of wine shop now and bought a bottle that was a top-shelf bottle, shall we say, for 50 quid.
Racy. Yeah. Triple X bottle.
You'd buy that and think, oh, that's going to be delicious. I paid 50 quid for it. It'll be delicious. That is almost certainly not going to be a bottle for drinking now. If it's a recent vintage, which it probably will be, it's very rare that you can go to a wine shop where they have bottles of all sorts of vintages that are drinking well now.
Mm.
So really good wines quite often won't be drinking at their best till maybe 15, 20 years after they've been bottled. So quite often you'll get people saying, but I've spent 50 quid in it and I drank it. It was piss. And you think,
Alexander Armstrong, thank you so much for coming in.
Such a pleasure.
To speak to us. And everyone watch a big ask because it will be brilliant.
Thanks.
Oh, well, pod chums, that's it for another series. But a great way to end. Alexander Armstrong was brilliant, wasn't he? I mean, there would be another great way to end. I haven't really mentioned it so far. I was holding it back, a bit excited, but we have been nominated at the Dave Weekly for a Loaded Laughter Award. I don't know if you've heard about it. Keeping it under my hat until now. But it's basically, you go on loaded.co.uk/laughters and you just press the little vote for us button and we could win an award. That'd be nice, wouldn't it? It'd also be nice if you tuned into Alexander Armstrong's Big Ask Tuesday. Days, 10 p.m. from the 26th of February. We'll be back soon, I think, for Series 3 of the Dave Weekly. Until then, you can find us, of course, on iTunes under Dave Weekly or on Twitter at @join_Dave and me at Ben Shires. And remember, it's loaded.co.uk/laughters. I really don't want to say too much because I don't like to plug things. Anyway, see you next time. Toodles, doodles. The Dave Weekly is a Pixiu production for Dave, hosted by me, Ben Shires, and produced by Joel Porter.
Would you give your mum, dad, aunt or that uncle who hugged your partner a little too long free access to your phone?
Oh, no! Oh, my God, it's a really long video. Ew!
In Dave's brand new YouTube original, Get Off My Phone, we've got six comedians to give their phones over to a relative with total freedom to read messages, DMs, photos and browser history.
Where's your search history?
Sorry?
What to do, tips for relief.
The rules are simple. Their relative can read anything they want and even make calls from the comedian's phone.
What is this? What is...
I know what this one is.
That looks really bad.
Starring Tanya Moore, Anya Magliano, Finlay Christie, Travis J with his mum Angie Lamar, Hayley Morris, Grace Campbell and dad Alistair Campbell.
Slightly sexually compromising people.
Divulging their deepest digital secrets.
What the hell is happening?
Get Off My Phone, a Dave YouTube original. Available now on Dave's YouTube channel.